Welcome to The Sober Effect, a show that looks at the positives of sobriety, the dangers of alcohol, and the many people who are affected by it. I'm Kate.
And I'm Steph. The ripple effect of alcohol is far-reaching, and those are the stories you'll hear on The Sober Effect.
So today we're talking about ayahuasca, which we didn't know anything about before we met Safa, who's our guest today. And it's quite a controversial topic. And actually, there should be a few warnings with this one, because not only do we talk about addiction at quite a serious level, but we also talk about suicide. And although this is a kind of natural drink, as it were, it is illegal in most countries, and people have died taking it. So, you know, this is something that we were just curious about because it's getting a lot of attention in the media at the moment. And a lot of people are using it. A lot of backpackers actually do this when they travel. It's kind of a rite of passage when they pass through Peru. But we wanted to know more about it, didn't we, Steph? We just thought, look, we're up for talking about anything, and we're not endorsing or condoning it. We just wanted to know what it was. And we were lucky enough to meet a lovely guy who was willing to come on and talk to us about it.
Yeah. I mean, Safa's story is different from any story we have had on the show. You know, I personally have never had a conversation with someone that had a recovery story like his. And he will get into that in our conversation with him. But it is one that I think needs to be shared. I think you and I both are really open-minded, and that's part of having a podcast, right? Like, we don't want it to just be all about one way to heal, because there isn't. Everyone's story is so different, and there's always some similarities, but I think our listeners will learn something, right? Whether it's something they want to do or not, it's not for everyone, clearly, as you will find out when you hear his story. And, you know, this is Safa's story. This is what his lived experience was. So I don't want anyone to think like we're condoning hallucinative drugs or anything like that. Like, that's not the point of this. There is a lot of responsibility that comes with this type of recovery. And I think that is what we want people to take away from this conversation.
Absolutely. Should we meet him? Because I think people need to hear what we're talking about before we can actually get into it. Let's talk at the other side.
Okay.
All right.
The first part for me was that I struggled with alcohol, cocaine, and opiates for 16 years, alcohol primarily, and that's actually the substance that I sought help for and attended a holistic recovery center in Saskatchewan, Canada in 2015. And I had tried for 10 years on my own to get some days back to back, and I would make it a couple of months, and then I would fall back on the alcohol, which would often lead me to other problem substance use or other problematic behaviors. And depression, ultimately, you know, major depressive disorder is what came first for me, chronic suicidal ideation. I experienced a lot of violence in my home as a child, and I experienced a lot of violence as a youth, just not going home and spending more time, you know, away from the safety of a safe and secure family home. And so for myself, alcohol and substance use became like my primary escape. And as I got older, I spent 12 years drilling for oil in the Canadian oil field as a conventional oil and gas drilling rig worker. You know, I went from living in moderate poverty as a child to all of a sudden having $10,000 to $12,000 a month, you know, at 19 years old. And I lived paycheck to paycheck with that level of income because of the level of alcohol and substance use that I was experiencing. And so by accident in 2014, I consumed a psychedelic substance, not knowing what I was really doing or what was going to happen, because I wasn't able to get drugs or alcohol that I was abusing at the time. And what happened was this intense spiritual awakening that I could only compare to maybe people's experience of meeting God or a near-death experience. And what I was shown in that experience was that if I ever really wanted to truly be happy and healthy, I needed to stop abusing alcohol and stop abusing harmful substances. And so 2 days later, I quit my job and I moved back to the West Coast of Canada. And I just started banging on the doors of mental health and addiction offices saying, hi, I've been struggling with substance abuse for 16 years and I'm depressed and I'm actually scared that I'm going to die. And I'd really like to get help because I believe that I could get better if I had the opportunity. And so that's what kicked my journey off. And You know, getting help didn't happen right away. It took a really long time to find a treatment center. And I even had the government of Canada deny my application for funding to receive treatment because of what I had made in the previous tax year. So I was instructed to quit my job and apply for welfare. Even though I had already quit my job, the paperwork from the previous year before showed I had made X amount of dollars. And so the government said, well, we're not going to cover you to go to treatment. So I was in this really dangerous situation. I didn't have anybody that trusted me enough to help me get to rehab, including my own family. And so it left me in this place of extreme suicidal thinking and hopelessness. And I actually wrote a suicide letter, you know, to my family saying, look, like if I can't get help, then I just don't want to be alive anymore because I can't continue living my life in the cycle of addiction. And my aunt, who I hadn't spoken to in about 20 years, received the email. She happened to work at a treatment center in Saskatchewan and called me the next day and said, my boss heard your story and she said that I get a freebie for a family member. So if you want to come to treatment, you just need to get on a plane and come here. And I arrived June 10th, 2015. And that was the last time I ever touched alcohol or hard substances.
It's such a common story of people in their kind of early, late teens. It just snowballs out of control. And sadly, a lot of people never come out of that. So it's amazing to hear that you actually took the initiative. And presumably this thing that you took, that's what changed you. You had a different experience than you've ever had before. And you sort of woke up. What was it that you took?
First of all, you know, what I'm about to share, I don't encourage misusing psychedelic substances. And what had happened for me was that I was really open with a close friend about some of the difficulty that I was in. They had a lot of really profound spiritual experiences using a substance known as LSD, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And so, you know, in the depth of my depression, my friend thought, you know, I'm going to send him some and try to have him help himself. And I received the LSD with a little card that said, take 2 drops, put it on a sugar cube, pray, meditate, write a gratitude list, go for a walk in nature. In the state that I was in and the lifestyle that I was living, you know, I just thought this was some hippie bullshit. And I crumpled the card up and threw it in the trash and I put the LSD in a junk drawer and forgot about it. And then the day came where I didn't have access to alcohol. It was actually Christmas Day and there was no way for me to get anything. And I remembered the LSD. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to take the whole thing and see what happens, right? Forget the 2 drops. And so that's what I did. And so, you know, the experience unfolded and I was shown many great things. I felt like I had smiled for the first time in my entire life. I felt this deep spiritual connection and knowing that everything could be okay if I started to make better choices. I felt extremely optimistic and happy and grateful to be alive. So when I attended treatment, one of the first questions that I was asked was, what made you want to come to treatment? And so I shared that aspect and that part of the story that this accidental experience led me towards wanting to receive help. And my first counselor said, oh, that's interesting. Do you know much of the story of Bill Wilson and how he was experimenting with LSD in the 1950s? And I said, no, I have no idea. So she showed me the book, Pass It On, the story of Bill Wilson. And there's actually a chapter about Bill Wilson's use of LSD in the early days and psychedelic experiences. And then there's another book called As Bill Sees It, which is often read in meetings. And, you know, there's these very powerful mystical and religious experiences shared in the book. And what's being described are actually these moments of psychedelic experiences and profound awakenings and epiphanies that came as a result of receiving medical assisted treatment through psychedelic therapy in the 1950s. So I found that really interesting. And so that sparked even more curiosity and more interest and understanding and, you know, coming to a place of learning more about this experience, because not only did it help me change my perspective and actually direct me more towards coming to believe in a higher power, but that experience actually gave me the strength and the courage and the belief that if I was to pursue help, it could be possible. It brought me out of the depths of hopelessness. And in the recovery community, this is a very controversial thing. This is something that, you know, most people go, oh, you know, psychedelics and it's bad and it's going to lead you to other substances and whatnot. And, you know, for some people that could be true. And for some people, the opposite is actually true. There's a lot more research being done. There's a lot more awareness now around MDMA for PTSD and psilocybin for depression and ketamine for depression and all of these various modalities and experimental substances, which were being studied in the 1950s and 60s until they became outlawed. lot. And then antidepressants, anti-anxieties, mood stabilizers, SSRIs, benzodiazepines kind of set the precedent for early addiction treatment or early mental health treatment for people who are in recovery. And it's not uncommon, actually, for people who are in 12-step fellowships to be taking one or more of these prescription medications as a way to regulate their nervous system or give them some stability. And in the eyes of the 12-step fellowships, and I mean fellowship outside of the program, you know, people's own political and moral beliefs, this is okay. But using a psychedelic substance or seeking psychedelic therapy is frowned upon. Why is that? Well, the reason is actually stigma. And the reason is actually because of the way psychedelic substances have been criminalized, you know, for decades. And so when I got out of treatment, my counselor was like, what's your plan? Like, what are you going to do? And I had been on antidepressants and mood stabilizers, Seroquel, Ativan, the whole gamut of these substances to help me with my depression and my mental health. And I had never found relief from 9 until I was 26. So how I regulated my nervous system was actually just through alcohol and chronic substance use, which is usually what most people are using the substances for anyways, right? We're looking for relief. So she said, what are you going to do when you leave here? And I said, well, I'm really curious about finding somebody that I can work with therapeutically, professionally, who works with psychedelics. And at this time, you know, in 2015, it was just slowly starting to reemerge. People were starting to look at using MDMA to treat PTSD. People were starting to look at using ketamine to treat depression. And I had actually been on a mailing list to sit with ayahuasca, which is a traditional Amazonian plant medicine, for 6 years prior to going to treatment. And I never attended because I just didn't think anything was going to help me. I never thought anything was going to give me what I needed and never really find relief, because I had already tried everything for so long. But the experience that I had with the LSD actually showed me, hey, you know, maybe there is something there. Maybe there is a way for there to be some way to seek support long term, because I had this belief and my family had this belief that the reason why you're depressed and the reason why you struggle with all of these different things is because of your alcohol and drug use. So 3 years after I stopped using drugs and alcohol, I found myself extremely depressed. And I applied to study social work at a university in Canada. I went back to university at 30 years old, you know, with no high school diploma. And my entire pursuit was just rooted in supporting people who use substances and overcoming their problem. And so through my research in university, you know, I took a special interest in studying psychedelics and writing papers about their efficacy in treating mental health and addictions. And I became really close with two of my university professors, one of them in particular, a PhD psychologist. And she said, you know, what you're sharing and what you're writing about, this is really interesting. I've been, you know, teaching psychology for 25 years, and I've never heard a student talk about psychedelic therapy before. This is really interesting. I'm really intrigued by what you're doing, and I encourage you to continue to pursue this. So, long story short, my substance use caused a whole wide range of health problems, physical health problems. I ended up needing colorectal surgery. I was put on a 2-year wait list. I was told surgery was the only thing that was going to help me. So, I lived with excruciating pain. I struggled with another pain problem called occipital neuralgia, which is like a nerve pain, goes through your occipital nerve, which I would get these electric shocks in the back of my head. And it actually came from a spinal injury. I had fibromyalgia and then just osteoarthritic pain and body pain that I lived with daily. And how I treated it in the past was actually through medications, opioids, and things like that. So when I got out of treatment, I knew that that wasn't an option anymore. I could not, absolutely not, take any form of prescription painkiller whatsoever, because I knew that I would abuse it. So I was white knuckling it, you know, for 3 years, just riding it out. And my therapist at the time was like, have you ever thought about trying ayahuasca? And I laughed at him, actually. And I was like really opinionated and kind of just like, yeah, like, you know, how is a psychedelic going to help me with my physical pain and my back pain and all of these different things that I'm struggling with? And he's like, well, you never know, like it has neuroregenerative properties. So it actually helps in the creation of new neurons and new neural pathways and can repair damaged cells, including brain cells in the body. And I was kind of like, oh, really? You know, so anyways, I was desperate. And I was depressed and I was suicidal. Here I am. I haven't used alcohol for 3 years and I'm still suffering from all the same symptoms. And I got the email to join a plant medicine retreat. And I thought, what have I got to lose? You know, like I might as well try it. At least I can say that I tried. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So I went. And the first two nights drank the medicine, the ceremony began, the people who sing the medicine songs sang, and, you know, there's people vomiting and all of the things you hear about ayahuasca, and nothing happened. And I was really upset and I felt really discouraged. And then the third night, the nurse who was there was like, you know, I'm going to give you some suggestions and give you some recommendations about sitting up and being engaged and really asking for help and really speaking to it like you're praying or, you know, asking it. So I asked on the third night and I said, what do I need to do? And there was this message that reminded me of that first experience. And it was like a feminine energy or even the voice of a woman. And she said, you need to learn how to love yourself. And I thought, how do I do that? And it responded and it said, just start by thanking your feet for getting you here to this part of the journey so that you can experience true healing. So I literally reached down and held my feet and just was like, thank you. And it was like, there was this moment where I thought, wow, like I've taken my ability to walk for granted. I've never once thought to be thankful for my feet or like any of these different aspects, you know? And then the journey showed me my mother, who I had been estranged from for almost 20 years, and the wound that that had left in me. And it gave me this perspective of actually the pain that my mother was in and how she felt abandoned and, you know, how it no longer was about me and my wound. It was actually about, wow, like my mother, this woman who suffered from addiction and mental illness for so long, was separated from me and my sister and the pain that that put on her. And I felt compassion for her for the first time. You know, I felt this deep sense of compassion and knowing that the next part of the step to getting myself well was to find a way to reconcile with my mom. And we had actually got reunited that year. And that experience turned me towards seeking therapy with my mom. And my mom and I actually began to go to counseling together, which is something that I never thought would be possible or something that I could do. But the experience that I had with the ceremony actually empowered me and gave me the strength to do that. So after that experience, I actually stopped thinking about suicide. I couldn't even try to think about it. The feelings and the thoughts of suicide and self-harm were completely gone. It further strengthened my knowing and trust in myself that never to go back to alcohol or substance use. I felt, wow, this just gave me even more reason to live and more reason to continue to pursue good health and wellness overall. So I continued to go to these ceremonies once a month. I wasn't taking any other medications. I wasn't doing anything else. And sometimes I would even go to the ceremony and I wouldn't even drink ayahuasca. I would just be in the ceremony because part of what I really enjoyed was the community and the fellowship and getting to hear other people's experience. And there were other people that I met who also came from paths of alcohol and substance use. So I had fellowship. You know, I had people that I could turn to and go to, which for me was like what I needed the most, actually, was the feeling of safety and the feeling of trust and the feeling of true friends and people who would believe in me and support me in what I was doing. So as this went on, my health improved dramatically. I went to the specialist after the third month of going to these ceremonies and she asked me, what is it that you've been doing? Did something change in your life? What's been going on? And I was really reluctant, of course, to say, you know, I've been drinking ayahuasca, which is illegal in Canada. And she said, well, whatever you're doing, I can't believe I'm telling you this, but you don't need surgery anymore. So I was like, wow, really? Like, I don't need surgery? Like, I was told surgery, colorectal surgery was the only way to correct this. And she said, you're like 80 to 90% healed. If whatever you're doing, you keep doing, you don't need surgery. So here I was going, oh my God, like my therapist was right somehow. Like, how did this heal my body? I have no idea. And so that even piqued my interest more, of course. And so as my journey went on and with university and working with addicts and people who have problems with substance use and mental health, I thought, wow, like I need to learn more about this. What can I do? And I learned about a center that had been founded by a physician in the Peruvian Amazon in 2011 that had high level of integrity and really good quality work with, you know, some clinical practice and other therapeutic modalities intertwined in what they offer. And I thought, well, I'm going to go there and just try it out and see if it could help and see what else I could learn. So I came down here for a month 3 years ago and I met my teacher, an indigenous Shipibo man by the name of Maestro Ricardo Amaringo, who's essentially a traditional Amazonian plant medicine doctor. He's been studying and working with these medicines for over 40 years. And I met him and I began my work here and going deeper into my healing. And, you know, it had just occurred to me that I needed to stay for longer and I needed to do more studying and learn more about this process and learn more about how this can continue to help me and how it can potentially be use to help other people seeking recovery. And yeah, 3 years later, I'm here. I'm in my second year of running the rehabilitative program that mostly caters to men. And it's empowerment focused, and it's about health and fitness and meditation and physical exercise and land stewardship and permaculture and really connecting to the earth. And, you know, the ayahuasca ceremony is definitely an aspect of it, but it's just a part of the program. What I really like to teach people is it's not about the ayahuasca. You know, the ayahuasca is a therapeutic tool. It's there for you to access, for it to show you what you need to do and how to apply it to your recovery in a very practical way.
Sorry, can I just interrupt, because I'm finding this really interesting, but what is ayahuasca? What is it?
Yeah, good question.
Because everything you're saying, I'm like, this sounds amazing. Why is it illegal? You know, it changed, like it literally seemed to repair your body. So my question is, like, before we carry on, I just like, what is it? Yeah. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. So ayahuasca is a traditional Amazonian plant medicine that has been used by the Shipibo Kanibo people, who are an indigenous group of the Amazon River Basin, particularly an area called the Ucayali. And I'm not exactly sure, possibly for millennia, they discovered that when you mix this vine and this particular leaf from a shrub, it has a psychoactive effect. And yeah, can be used to treat and cure a wide range of illnesses, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. And so the combination of these two plants are cooked together and administered. And in the old days, traditionally, the person who was the medicine man of the village or the doctor of the village or shaman, which is kind of a more commonly used word, they would drink the medicine and the patient would come to them and the shaman would sing to them in the Shipibo language, these medicine songs, you know, to clear away whatever the ailment might be. And in modern times, and, you know, more recently, maybe the past 30 years, when ethnobotanists and psychotherapists and physicians and psychologists and psychiatrists began to discover that this psychedelic medicine was being used to treat and heal illness, of course, it spiked to curiosity and people began to come down asking the people, can we drink ayahuasca? We want to experience this medicine. And so I think that's kind of what sparked the early days of research. And, you know, it's well documented. There's a lot of information out there about this plant medicine and this work. And it's just a facet of traditional Amazonian plant medicine. And in my time being here, I've actually learned that there's many trees, possibly hundreds, maybe thousands of plants that have medicinal properties. And I would say almost all of them have been used in studies to develop and create traditional modern medicines that are actually used in this day and age, you know, from different compounds in tree bark and different compounds in leaves and different compounds in roots. A lot of these Amazonian plants that have been used to treat arthritis or symptoms of menopause, for instance, or other problems with depression and mood and things like that have actually been extracted and diverted or synthesized into what many modern medicines are today to treat those same conditions. So the indigenous people knew that these plants had these abilities and knew, you know, that they could cure these illnesses and these ailments. And so, yeah, essentially that's what it is. It's medicine.
I just like, this is so much information and like processing it. And it's so cool because I'm on the very tip of this type of stuff. Like there was a time I took an herbalism class. There was so much information in this class. For me, it was so overwhelming. But the one thing I took away from it was there's so much out there still that like we don't even utilize. We're just so, especially being in America, we're so used to just going to the doctor, getting our prescription, trusting that that's what we need. And I learned there's so many more alternatives that don't have the side effects, right? That like a prescription drug would have. I mean, you see those prescription drug commercials and they like tell you all these side effects. You're like, oh my God, I'd be worse off than the problem that I'm trying to solve. So this is just really fascinating. And I've heard of ayahuasca. I've heard podcasts with like celebrities talking about, you know, their journey. I feel like it's starting to become like this new like fad and maybe being talked about irresponsibly, because when you're talking about it, I love how you're being very responsible about the effects what can happen, the fact that it might not be for everyone. So do you want to talk a little bit about that maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Happy to. And it's a great topic, actually. And it's really important because psychedelic therapy, of course, one of the reasons why it's taking the stage and so many people are talking about it in the medical world and even in levels of government is because of monetization and capitalism. You know, this is another way that people are looking to make money. This is another way that people are looking for a quick and easy fix. And that's not what psychedelics are. They're not a quick and easy fix. It takes a great deal of maturity and responsibility and training and intelligence, safety measures and protocols to be set up the same way any medication should be monitored or supervised. And the reality is there's a lot of people out there who don't have the experience. They don't have the training. You know, they're taking psychedelics or selling psychedelics. And even in the regulated world, ketamine clinics and therapists, and, you know, there's 3-month courses now and 6-month courses to become a trained psychedelic therapist. And most of those people don't have direct lived experience. You know, they haven't worked with psychedelics for long. It's become something that, you know, a lot of people are definitely interested in. I think for the most part, the right reasons. But I also think, you know, there is a danger there for it to be misused and for people to be misinformed about the efficacy and what it really takes, not only to administer it, but what it really takes to heal from it. And the main thing about the healing is that people need community. They need support. You know, they need non-judgmental fellowship and people to be able to facilitate that. And where I think psychedelic therapy holds the most promise is actually for people who've been resistant to other treatments, people who've been unresponsive to conventional rehabilitation, people who've been unresponsive to conventional medicine. And, you know, in terms of side effects, I mean, if you look at the side effects of Wellbutrin or Seroquel or Paxil or any of these other SSRIs, mood stabilizers, anti-anxiety medications, pretty harmful. You know, pretty harmful, pretty, you know, they've got the potential to make people very unwell. And for some people, they work in a lot of ways. And I think they're designed to be temporary, to get people to a place where they have stability in their life and they can start making healthy decisions for themselves. And I mean, that's the same way that I view psychedelic therapy. It doesn't have to be this ongoing, continued thing where, you know, you're taking psychedelics every single weekend. And I feel like anybody who thinks they're going to go to an ayahuasca retreat or a psilocybin retreat for 4 days or 7 days and be cured of their addiction, it's not how it works. It's not going to happen. I hate to say it.
Well, you are saying it because actually, people will be sold it and people will be abused, just like any substance will be abused. Because if you say to someone, this little thing here will give you this, someone will say, give me 50. Mm-hmm. Let's see what that does. Because that's become the nature of us.
Especially us addicts, right? And I think, that's the problem with stuff like this is like, okay, so I'm just going to go from binge drinking alcohol. Now I'm going to just get into this ayahuasca or whatever and do it at the same level, thinking that it's going to cure everything.
But what I like about what you've said is that you've explained it as a package. In my mind, it's a well-being package. And the fact you mentioned things like community and support and learning, appreciation and self-love and self-worth, those things you have put up there with the actual process of taking this thing, you haven't put that on a pedestal and said, and all these other things come with it. You've said all these things, and that's just one of them. It's an experience. You have to open yourself up to all of it. And that's what I find really interesting, because everyone goes on their own journey of self-discovery and healing when they stop. What my journey looks like is going to be very different to what you were like as a young man and to what Steph was like over in the States with a completely different way of drinking. The thing is, this is an option, right? This is an option for people. And what you're saying is this isn't going to work for everyone. But why are things that are literally plants, and I might be sounding really naive here, why are they illegal when we're taking stuff that's chemical stuff with 500 side effects and we're popping these pills because our doctor, I don't understand how society has become like that. Why is this illegal if it is literally just natural?
Number one, I mean, you know, pharmaceutical prescription medications are monetized by physicians. They get paid a big amount of money. And I know this from my work as an interventionist and supporting people in conventional recovery, you know, outside of the plant medicine world. And I've been doing that for 8.5 years. and meeting with a person's methadone doctor and saying, hey, like, what can we do to start tapering the patient down so that we can get them into treatment so that once they're in rehab, they don't need to be on methadone. They contest it. You know, they fight it tooth and nail. Oh, well, you know, they should probably stay on the methadone while they're in treatment. I'm like, well, they don't want to. So what can we do to help them get off so that once they go through treatment, they've been there for 90 days, they come out and they don't need to come and see you for drugs. Because that's what they are, they're drugs. And so that's one example, you know, it's monetization. And the second piece is, you know, these plant medicines and these traditional modalities that have been, you know, demonized and criminalized and vilified. I mean, one aspect is colonization. Indigenous cultures throughout North America and throughout the world have been, you know, mistreated isn't even the word, right? It's been full on genocide, you know, and people's cultural beliefs and their traditional medicines shunned and frowned upon because they're seen as barbaric or they're seen as primitive, right? And so now with this new psychedelic renaissance and all of this research and people's own personal findings coming to light and seeing that, well, these ceremonies and these medicines can be used with great potential to heal and increase emotional capacity and promote overall wellness. You know, like let's look at them and let's explore them. And on one side of the scale, there's corporations who are looking to make money, you know, and then on the other side of the scale, there's people who genuinely care. There's people who genuinely care about the human condition. There's people who genuinely care about people who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder and substance use that want to make a difference and that want to find healthy ways to create space for people to experience that healing and find freedom and relief from their suffering without having to develop any type of dependency or for there to be any monetary gain whatsoever. My experience has been on that side of the scale, most definitely. Money wasn't really a factor. It was more about like, how can we actually help you to find peace so that you don't go back to using drugs or potentially end your life because you're not able to cope with your feelings. So I've been really fortunate and it's worked for me. I've had 13 participants come through the program. I haven't made a cent. You know, it all goes into the Indigenous community. The center is Indigenous owned and operated. I have people that get paid, you know, some money to work and we plant food and things like that. And so it's all about having a way to really give back. And, you know, I feel indebted to this path and to working with traditional Amazonian plant medicine and the Shipibo tradition because it gave me my life back. Like I'm healthier and stronger than I've ever been in my entire life, mentally, physically. Working with ayahuasca has only made me more solid in knowing that alcohol is never an option. You know, drugs are never an option. And to just continue working towards being my best self so that I can continue to support people who qualify for this program. And I say no to 97, 98% of applicants. I get 10 to 15 emails a week, calls, text messages from family, people wanting to send somebody down here. And yeah, I run a tight ship. I'm extremely responsible with who I say yes to. And if I don't think it's going to be a good fit for somebody, I just tell them sorry.
What are you looking for in someone to allow them to come have this experience with you?
One of the main things is we're quite isolated. We don't do medical detox here. So if somebody's, you know, struggling with benzodiazepine dependence or alcohol dependence or even illicit fentanyl, which has, you know, all kinds of different veterinary medications in it that, you know, withdrawal alone can be fatal. They have to go through medical detox and be cleared by a physician in North America or wherever they might be coming from, Europe, doesn't matter. They have to go through medical detox first and have a physician clear them and say, yeah, these substances are out of your system, potentially be brought down with a chaperone, which we've done. We've had this situation happen. And a lot of people think that they're going to come here and they're going to detox and that the ayahuasca is going to take all the drugs out of their system and remove their desire to use. And yeah, you know, I just want to come down for a week or I want to come down for 2 weeks. And I just tell them, that's not how it works. And anybody telling you that that's what's going to happen, run, because they only want your money. They don't give a shit about you. My recommendation is always 12 weeks, 90 days. You know, there's scientific reasons for 90 days. I mean, everybody's probably heard of, you know, the 90 and 90. People recommend you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And there's like the neuroplasticity side of it and retraining the mind and retraining the brain and creating healthy habits and patterns. So that's one aspect of it. And the second part to that is just having the time. You know, just having time away from the environment that you may have been in, the career you may have been in, the unhealthy relationships and levels of relationships that you might have been in, to really just give somebody space so that they have time to really take a look and zoom out and go, okay, the fog has lifted. I'm not able to use anything. And when they're here, once they're here, we're quite isolated. You know, we're an hour away from the nearest city, which is the most isolated city in the world. It's only accessible by plane or boat. So there's no roads. So once somebody's here in my care, I'm like, you got nowhere to go. You know, you've signed up. You're here to do the work. I'm going to do my best to support you. And
I'd be really serious about it.
You got to be really serious about it. Yeah. And it's a safety thing. You know, first and foremost, I'm a harm reductionist. You know, my whole purpose is making sure that people are safe, making sure that people are well informed, making sure that people haven't rushed a decision like this or aren't being told, you know, by their employer or their family member or wife or whatever it might be, that you have to do this or, you know, your job's gone or a relationship's gone. And it can't be about that. Yeah. A person has to show up. They have to say, I've read, I've learned, I've researched, you know, I have two weekly meetings, a Wednesday and a Saturday meeting. And, you know, in the intake process generally takes 2 to 4 weeks with me. And a person has to show up to all of those meetings. They have to message me every single day, contact me by voice note or text message and say, hey, I'm doing okay today. Today's day 10. I'm not using. I've got a doctor appointment. I got a counseling appointment. I'm going to go to this meeting. I'll give you a call tonight at 5. I'll see you at the meeting on Wednesday. That's the first part, you know, and if somebody's not doing that, I'm like, you know, I don't know, you know, like, I don't want you to just come down here and think this is a vacation, because it's not. And at the same time, I like to take people to have fun. You know, there's a motocross track here. We go watch the motocross races. We go to soccer games. We go grocery shopping and, you know, this really intense jungle market, you know, with all kinds of foods and different things. You know, there's beautiful jungle adventures to go on. We go canoeing in the river near the place that we live. I teach a boxing class for kids. You know, I've got a full gym that I built here, squat rack, bench press, weights, kettlebells. Physical health and exercise and all of that is fundamental, because part of what my teaching is that it doesn't matter where you go. If you go to a rehab in the States, or you go to a rehab in Canada, or you go to a rehab in Spain, doesn't matter where you are. It's like, it's easy to not use drugs or alcohol there because there aren't any, you know? So it's like, what are you going to do while you're here to ensure that when you leave, it's not an option? So, you know, implementing yoga, physical exercise, gardening work, volunteer work, being in a mentorship type of role, or developing a mentorship level of community involvement, you know, it's about empowerment, so that when somebody goes, they find what they love to do. Maybe they want to work with animals. Maybe they want to work with kids. Maybe they want to get into social work or harm reduction or counseling, go back to school for something, whatever it might be. It's like that process and that journey starts here. And what empowers people and gives people the belief is the fellowship that we have and the community that we have. And they get to see other people who've actually been able to make these changes and learn how to implement them into their lives in a practical and successful way.
It sounds wonderful what you're doing. It really does. Is it successful?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got a big reach. You know, I did a lot of drug user advocacy and community advocacy in Canada for a number of years. And part of my motive and my mission was always about educating people on the safe use of psychedelic substances and responsible psychedelic use for people in recovery from my own direct lived experience. You know, I don't have any letters beside my name, but I've got 16 years of hardcore addiction and mental illness that I overcame 9 years ago. And I've got a lot of support. Laws are changing, legalities changing around certain substances, especially psychedelic substances. And, you know, their potential to treat substance use. I've lost 38 friends since 2015 to drug overdoses, you know, and I'm not talking Facebook friends or like Instagram friends. I mean, like people that I grew up with, people that I know their children, people that I went to meetings with, people that I took to rehab, people that I would invite over to my house to have dinner and hang out. They're gone. You know, they died from overdoses. You know what I mean? And so the amount of death that I've experienced and the trauma that I have around losing people that I love, and stigma being a factor in that, and people feeling like they're going to NA and they're every week they're putting their hand up, and you know, less and less people want to be close to them and talk to them because they're not following the program a certain way and they're not learning in a certain way, and they're chronic relapsers or whatever box people get put in. Those people died. You know, those people died. And it breaks my heart. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of losing people.
I mean, what he says there shows like why he's so passionate about helping people, right? Like 38 people. And like you said, these weren't just like Instagram followers or friends, that like these were people that he said he'd invite into his home. Like that's a lot of loss. So yeah, I can see why it's so important to him to do this responsibly, to help people that are so lost in their recovery and don't know what else to do. He's an amazing person. Like he doesn't even like make any money really off of this. And
no, I mean, he said he gave it all back. He gives it all back to the community. And you're right. And we know that our drinking habits were having an effect on our life. And he's obviously been around people with very severe drug and alcohol problems. And when you find a way out, when you have felt that desperate, as he was when he was 19, you want to help other people because you know how close you were to just not wanting to be around anymore. And you think, if I've managed to get out, if I can help just one person, of course you want to share it. And I really like the way, and I said it during our conversation, that he kind of talks about it all. It's not just this one product. It isn't taking a pill. That's what society does now. It wants a quick fix. And actually, all the things he spoke about are so important. And we know that the community, the support, it's changing the way you think about things. It's digging deep. Mm-hmm. It's getting things out. It's feeling comfortable. It's feeling secure and safe and listened to. And without a doubt, those are the things that everyone needs to make such a huge change. You know, we need that. And there are so many ways people find to get sober. And this is one of them. And I found it fascinating. And actually, I'm going to be reading up more about this, not because I want to try it, because for me, I know this would be an absolute no, because you know, I've not taken drugs really. I'm not, you know, even weed sent me spiraling out of control. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really, it's just not for me. I'm one of those people who would not do well. And I don't need it because I'm really happy where I am. But it's just fascinating the journeys that people have, the stories people tell us, just incredible. And if you're not watching this on YouTube, you couldn't see it, but he was calling us from the middle of the Amazon.
Yeah.
So he had a hammock in the background and we could hear all these tropical birds, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
I thought one of them was a monkey. I mean, it was just incredible. What a place. I really just want to go on holiday there, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is a whole mind, body, soul experience, which is life. I mean, for me in my recovery, especially, it's all about balance. Like, that's what I always come back to. Like, that's my anchor. It's mind, body, soul. Like, I have to have all three of those things in balance to feel like a whole human. Like, we've had episodes about spirituality and how alcohol brings you down to low vibration, and him explaining that when he took that LSD and how it was like this spiritual awakening and there was this voice that spoke to him. I feel like my recovery was similar, not as extreme, right? I didn't take a drug, but I do feel like there was this spiritual thing that happened. Like, I found spirituality while I was a drinker. And it was in the moments when I would take these breaks from alcohol where there was this voice that was louder than the one that wanted to drink. There was this voice, like he was describing, that would always tell me, like, this isn't what you want. This isn't what you need. You know that you deserve better. And my outlet of, or what I used, I guess, to get that voice to be the louder voice was when I did my hypnosis, right? So we all have found ways to make that voice, that inner self, that's what you need. You need to find a way to connect with that voice and let that be the one that's running the show. And there's just so many different ways to do it.
I've read that it is something that a lot of backpackers want to try. Mm-hmm. And they do. And sadly, some people have died after taking it. And it does say in the article that I've read, people with mental health problems really should not try this. And she was saying, it was an article in the BBC News, and it was a backpacker who was saying she tried it and all these really vivid childhood memories came back to her. But she said, you know, there were people being violently sick around her. That it takes everything out of you. It's an incredibly intense experience, which would scare me, to be honest. I would be terrified of something like that. But it's just fascinating. And it's also interesting to hear what happens. I mean, this has been going on for what, thousands of years. People have been taking stuff like this, and life is still so different. We feel that we're all connected and we're all on the same wavelength, but we really aren't. You know, there are these communities in the middle of the Amazon that are doing traditional things they've been doing for thousands of years and finding ways to deal with problems that we're all facing on different levels and in different ways. whether we're surrounded by high-rise buildings in New York City or living on a farm in Shropshire. As people, we battle the same demons, don't we? And we need to find a way when we get in too deep.
Yeah. It's like I mentioned in the conversation with him, you know, I've taken an herbalism class. Like, this stuff is very fascinating to me. And I find it really cool that there's things in nature that are meant to, I mean, and it makes sense. There should be things in nature that are meant to help us with medicine and things like that. So I love diving deeper into this avenue, because we obviously, like, this was not part of my herbalism class, I will tell you that. But, you know, like, the whole hallucination thing, like, it's always like hallucinogenic. Yeah. You and I have always, we've been talking about how, like, a lot of these words are a struggle for us.
It's so hard to say.
Like LSD, I can say that.
Yes,
I know,
say that.
I knew of that in high school. I had friends that did it. I was scared to death of doing that. It sounded too out of control for me. I think, you know, you talk about the hikers just doing it. There's people that want to do this stuff like recreationally, right? Like any other drug, because they want the trip. They want, you know, all the hallucinations and everything. And I think it's really important, like Safa was saying, if you're going to go down this road, or you're going to look into it, you need to find someone like Safa who's extremely responsible about it, who's not trying to make money off you, who's not going to have you just come for a week or two. Like he said, like, it's 90 days. It's not just coming in and doing this drug and having a cool story to tell. You have to be in the right place. And that's why I think a lot of these things have such a bad rap, and they're illegal and all of that, because they do get in the wrong hands and they do get abused just like anything else. I mean, I just can't stress it enough. And I know he was too, to just, we don't jump into this kind of stuff.
It's scary to think that there are people out there trying to sell this who don't know anything about it, who have done a 3-month course in a textbook or online. It's really scary. And it's like everything. And it's funny you say, oh, I'd be scared of taking LSD. And I say, oh, I'd be terrified of taking heavy drugs. But then we were drinking wine and look at me. I mean, I was a completely different person who stepped up in front of cars, made a fool of myself, couldn't remember getting home. We were doing things like that.
Yeah.
But because it's something that's sold in the shops, in the local shops and sold in restaurants, you think, oh, but it's okay. But actually, that was pretty terrifying as well. All of these drugs, you've got to understand your limits. You've got to understand why you take it, when you take it, how you take it. And that goes from a simple paracetamol, aspirin, you know, to a bottle of wine, to this stuff. It's like, just know what you're putting in your body, know what it does, and be with someone who has a deep understanding of how to use it properly, if you're even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's the bit of advice that really stood out. And I really respect him for that, because he wasn't trying to sell anything.
No.
He was trying to inform us about what it is and how it helped him. And I agree, his story is incredible, and just got so much respect for him. And all of his details are in our show notes, aren't they? And,
yeah.
You know, follow him online. He's really interesting. He does some great videos.
Yeah, his website, sacredrebelsrecovery.com. He said he's very open to conversations, because that's like his mission, is to just let people know and educate. And I think that's an amazing thing. And yeah, thank you, Safa. Like, you've really opened our minds and taught us something new. And I love learning. So especially when it comes to this kind of stuff. So it was really cool. Thanks for tuning in. We're just two women from opposite sides of the pond striving to shed light on the negative impacts of alcohol. Quick heads up, we're not licensed therapists or doctors. If alcohol is seriously affecting your mental or physical health, seek professional help.
And don't forget to hit that follow button to catch all of our future episodes. If you think our podcast could make a difference to someone you know, share the love. And hey, leaving a 5-star review will really help the Sober Effect reach more fantastic people like you. So thank you.